Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Don't sweat the technique. Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branagh.
7-1-5-1, Stroud has faced more third and longs than anyone in the league. Slowick's first and second down plays have hurt the offense living to its potential. I think there's some validity to that. I have no problem with that take.
No, I'm fine with that as well. I mean, look, I think that we like to think because they're 4-1 that, you know, that they've had smooth sailing, and we know that there have been challenges, and we know the fact that with the penalties and all the different issues that they were dealing with the offensive line, that there were plenty of opportunities. I think it was it 2 games ago that it was like 8 of the 9 third down situations that CJ was in was at least 10 yards to where, you know, it again is a feather in his cap that he's been the guy that everything has kind of rested on his shoulders, you know, in those situations, in the end of half situations, in the end of game situations, and he makes all the throws and he makes the plays when you need them.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I think that he's really, really good, which gets into the film do not lie. Because if you watch, just turn on the film, which the Twitchers don't do that. They don't know ball like we know ball. I think Stroud is special. Like, you see the precision that he has under pressure in his face, how cool, calm, and collected he stays. The ball placement, bless you. The ball placement is fantastic. He's scrambling a little bit more this year, too, which he talked about earlier this year, where Joe Mixon kind of challenged him to do that, which I would offer some advice of caution when it comes to that. Like, if you're gonna run, which I'm in favor of, that's fine. Let's not take some hits, CJ.
We need the
Let's
CJ
slide
rules
a little bit more. Yes, absolutely.
Sure, get out of bounds. Yeah. Get out and make business decisions. Yeah. Whether your business or our business, get out of harm's way.
Yeah, he's. I don't mind him running more, but the whole him taking hits, I'm not a huge fan of. But Stroud, I thought, was fabulous in this game. And you go back to the 2 turnovers, which, I mean, yeah, those do need to be cleaned up. The interception, you know, watching it back, it looked to me like it was in zone coverage, but Stroud thought Bernard was in man coverage and thought he was tracking Schultz. And the moment he committed to throw the ball, he turns around and it's right at him.
Yep.
So that one, I mean, yes, protect the football. You can't throw an interception there. Stroud deserves blame there. Not making excuses. I think it was a little bit unlucky, not making excuses. Go ahead.
I was going to say, one that always sticks out in my mind is the Indianapolis game because of the fact that, you know, you're trying to run the clock out. You're trying to, you know, get a first down, and you come out of what I think it was the 2-minute warning on a third down, and you throw an absolute dart on the sideline to Nico in the only place that you could actually complete that ball. And Nico makes a hell of a catch, but I don't know many quarterbacks in this league that's even going to try that.
Nope.
And then put the ball exactly where it had to be.
He had one to Xavier Hutchinson, which he did that spin cycle thing, and the TV copy didn't really do it justice because it was on the near sideline. You couldn't see the play. If you go back and watch it behind the offensive line, it was a pretty catchable ball. That play might have been made if it was
Nico.
Went
both directions?
Yeah, he went. He went towards the left, and then there was a defender there, and he spun away
back,
from
yep.
him. It was like to the near sideline on the TV copy as you were watching. That was an amazing play. He had another one where he was immediately pressured and kind of like off his back foot, just slings it to Stephon Diggs over the middle of the field. And then he had the one to Schultz on third down late in the game.
Is that the one everybody's raving about where he moved, he slid, the defender was coming at him, he had to change his arm angle and still put it in the only place that it could be.
And he had to put it. There you go. And whenever it's Dalton Schultz, it better be. It better be in the perfect spot. Because Dalton Schultz is in my doghouse. Get to that in a second. And by the way, everybody's talking about Nico Collins on that one play, you know, the deep pass play for the touchdown. That throw was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. That was 60 yards in the air, dropped into the bucket in stride. Unbelievable.
Wasn't one of the knocks on him coming out, too, was his arm strength on the deep balls?
Yeah. He doesn't have like a howitzer.
Right, he doesn't have a howitzer, but you know what? He can make all the throws, and that was a hell of a throw.
Yeah, he was. I thought he was really stinking good. And yes, you have to be critical of his 2 turnovers. That's fair to be critical of the 2 turnovers. The fumble, he was a bit careless with the football. D'Amico Ryans on the Coffee with the Coaches said that somebody ran the wrong route there. I couldn't figure out who ran the wrong route. There was a receiver who kind of popped for a screen. I wonder if it wasn't a screen, but I couldn't really figure that one out. But he does kind of have the ball out there like a loaf of bread. He had 2 hands originally. normally, and then whenever Fisher got pushed into his lap, he put his left hand on Fisher to kind of get his footing, and when that happened, the ball got knocked out. Yeah, the defender knocked the ball out, but probably more Fisher than Stroud, but Stroud does have to take care of the football whenever you have a muddy pocket. They forced Allen and his receivers to win one-on-one, and overall they couldn't win one-on-one. Like, the Texans' coverage probably had their best game of the year, I felt.
That's why I said, I think when you watch the tape and you watch it, you know, over and over again, and you go from week to week, you see a guy in Lassiter that's getting better every week. Sure, he's going to make some mistakes. There's still people that are going to question his overall speed in covering receivers. But I think that the fact that he understands the game, he understands angles, and you see some of the way he's able to take some of the receivers, either not completely out of the game, but make it extremely challenging for better receivers, you know, better than average receivers to get the football. I think he's only going to get better, and he's way better than Henderson and Okuda and guys you brought in thinking they were going to be the guy opposite of Stingley this year.
Yeah, I think Lassiter's been good. He's willing to deliver a little bit of thunder.
Yep.
That hit he had on Cook, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I thought Anderson was better on film. I know I've been critical of Anderson on today's show. I thought he was better on film. He drew some chips. He drew some double teams. He had the extra attention of the Bills. He did hurry Josh Allen at times. Perhaps the biggest play was that third down whenever Buffalo had it deep in their own, like inside their 5-yard line after the Tommy Townsend
the
punt on their last series, the turnover on the punt. They went 3 and out on the goal line on their final offensive series. That third down play where he had Mack Hollins running wide open in the middle of the field, Will Anderson disrupted that play because he was in Josh Allen's face and led to an errant throw. Dalton Schultz, I think, has been playing poor football. I think Dalton Schultz has kind of went into business for Dalton Schultz. He had the one play inside the 15 where it's right there. Like, he had to leave his feet a little bit, lunge for it, hit him in the hands. It hit Dalton Schultz in the hands, and he dropped it. He had another one on a third and like 7 or 8, which he wasn't going to catch it for the first down. It would have been a couple of yards short. He alligator armed it again.
Because what was it a couple games ago? We were talking about the ball over the middle that C.J. gets, you know, people looking at him going, oh, that was a missed throw. You didn't hit him. Well, if Dalton Schultz doesn't alligator arm the ball over the middle, he's probably got a reception there. The one that really got chapped me too in that game is you're a veteran. You're an experienced veteran, and you get a 15-yard penalty for throwing the ball at the guy after the play.
We're talking
about plays and penalties and things that the team doesn't need, and the coaches are facing heat because we're wondering, like, what are they doing or not doing? And then you got a guy that does something stupid like that and really screws you, especially after they called it dead ball.
I saw some people defending that.
Why?
I don't know. Like, it was kind of like, it wasn't like he didn't throw the ball at him. Like, I mean, in terms of like aggressive, like he didn't spike it on his forehead, but he tossed the ball at him. Like, you have to be smarter than that.
Yeah. He waited. The guy looked like, I don't know if the guy was, he was still on the ground.
He waited, and
the play was, the referee's standing right there, and he just decides to throw it right at him.
Yeah, that was dumb. Some people thought it was a soft penalty, which, you know, maybe it's soft, but at the same time, don't throw the football at him, Dalton Schultz. Blake Fisher's first start, I thought he was pretty stinking bad. Howard's pretty superior to Blake Fisher right now in their NFL lives. Fisher was pretty stinking bad in this game.
Yeah, and you know, we heard that he was raw, that he needed work, that if he played an extra year at Notre Dame, he'd have been a first-round pick next year. They were hoping to kind of groom him and bring him along. There's a whole lot of work to be done because it just looks like he's getting manhandled a lot. He's getting shoved back into the quarterback even when he stays between the defender and the quarterback. And I don't feel real comfortable with him playing right tackle for any length of time.
I never thought I'd be clamoring for the return of Titus Howard, but here we are, clamoring for the return of Titus Howard. Woods was criticized for his two punts that he fielded inside the five, but I thought he was actually really good in the return game. He needs to stop fielding it inside the five. But you got points at the end of each half, field goals at the end of the first half, field goal obviously at the end of the second half. Both were sparked by a big return from Robert Woods, both times. I wouldn't be shocked if Steven Sims is cut.
I agree.
At some point this year.
The one at the end of the first half was the one where he turned the corner and got to the sideline and got like 25.
I think that was his biggest return.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was at least 20. That was a really, really key return right there.
Yeah, just cut Steven Sims. Just move on from Steven Sims. I don't want to see a lot of Xavier Hutchinson because it means that Nico Collins is hurt, but I really like Xavier Hutchinson.
I think he's better than Mechie.
Yeah, oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
I think we were talking about at the start of the year that, you know, maybe there's a guy that you try and hide on the practice squad or you might have to get rid of. I think that he's proven that no matter where you drafted John Metchie, that Hutchinson's a better receiver. And you know, I think he's going to continue to get better as he gets the reps in game. But I think he's got a future here.
I think they're two separate positions, kind of, quite frankly, because Xavier Hutchinson's more of a boundary receiver. Metchie's more of an inside receiver. Yes, they're kind of interchangeable and can all do the same thing. Although I think that's a reason that Hutchinson played so many snaps is because he's the X receiver, the backup to Nico Collins. I liked what I saw from him. I don't want to see a lot of him because I want Nico back as healthy as possible, as quickly as possible. But a fan of him, was a fan of Eric Murray in this game. Eric Murray was good in this game. He and Bullock to me, Bullock, my bad. He and Bullock to me are easily the top two safeties on this team.
Oh, great.
Ward's a distant third for me.
And Eric Murray is active, and he's all over the field. And yes, there's going to be some plays that they're not great, but for the most part, he does step up and seem to also make a lot of quality plays for this football team. Tor, I agree with you. I think especially in coverage, I think that, yeah, there's a time or two that he might not have the right swivel. He might get caught a little off guard, but overall, I've been happy with his play.
Yeah. I'm curious because I know Ward was hurt in that game, but he came back in.
The bizarre thing was, too, was that it was his shoulder, I thought.
I thought he was concussed.
First, I thought he was concussed. Then he went to his shoulder. Then he went to the blue tent. And then didn't he leave the game with, like, a leg injury?
Maybe so.
And I'm going, wow, well, when did that happen?
Maybe that's why he left the game. But I think it was for the better because I think Murray's better in coverage and they were playing a lot of man. Ocho, speaking of Burrow and Stroud, this Texans offense reminds me of the Bengals during Burrow's rookie season. They went to the Super Bowl behind a poor offensive line similar to the Texans. They even had Mixon. I think it's a pretty good comparison. I think the Texans offensive line should be better than that Bengals offensive line, though.
Well, we talked about it. Whether you just look at it on paper and think that, or you just know and have seen enough of a guy that's supposed to be still a top five left tackle and the guys that you've put out there. Obviously, Howard didn't play this week. But when we've talked about the fact that you haven't had injuries to speak of until the Howard injury and you've used the draft capital you've used, I think this offensive line should be a lot better than it's been so far this year.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. Did you watch the Monday night game yesterday? I'm sure you did. My takeaway from that, I think the Chiefs are beatable. I think they're beatable. I'll tell you why next. This is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
I'm over the Chiefs. I'm over them. Yes, I know they're undefeated. Yes, I know Kareem Hunt's running for over 100 yards. Juju Smith-Schuster's going for 130. Look like Travis Kelce washed up his washedness. Pat Mahomes over 330. Yes, I know Kansas City's 5-0. Yes, I know they win championships all the time. They're beatable. The Chiefs are beatable. I think that you can get to the Chiefs. Yes, they put up huge numbers yesterday against a decent Saints defense. But I think you can get to their offense, I think especially if you have a good defense. Yes, their defense is really good, but I think they're beatable, Blankers.
Yeah, I think right now they are. I think the scary thing is that there's still time for them to figure out wide receiver. I was thinking about it this weekend with just how bad Cleveland's imploding, that Amari Cooper might be in play more than a Davante Adams, where they might still be able to find another wide receiver to kind of fortify what they don't have to make up for the fact that they were just going tight end heavy as can be yesterday and still somehow making that work along with the combination of their backs. You just always, they're beatable right now. There's no doubt about watching that game because that game was not entertaining. That game was tough to watch in a lot of ways, but that's Andy Reid just finding whatever means necessary to get a win. But the scary thing is that if they do add a receiver or two, the rest of their team, their defense is still really, really tough and really good, and Jones just wreaks havoc all over the football field, that when you've got Patrick Mahomes, you're probably going to be good, but when you've got Patrick Mahomes with an extra couple of weapons they're missing, they still can be really good.
Yeah, gun to my head, who wins the AFC? I would pick the Chiefs. But I think you can get to them. I really do. And like the wide receivers you mentioned to me, I don't think that they're great fits. Amari Cooper's not really a burner. I think they like speed and quickness in their wide receiver room. I think it's why they drafted Rashee Rice a couple of years ago. It's why they drafted Xavier Worthy this year. They have made trades for receivers receivers, I think, in each of the last two deadlines. So I do think that they're going to be targeting a receiver. I have a feeling it's going to be somebody that we don't expect. I don't think it's going to be an Amari Cooper. I don't think it's going to be a DeAndre Hopkins. I do think that they're going to look for help there. They lost Hollywood Brown in the preseason. They don't expect him to play in the regular season. The news came out on Rashee Rice. He's going to be out for the rest of the year, which the Adam Schefter report was weird. Adam Schefter was tweeting it yesterday, and Schefter was like, yeah, you know, the news they got was better than they expected. And then 5 minutes later, he's out for the season. It's like, okay, thanks for that, Schefty.
And how many opinions has he had? Because they've been second opinioning and having different guys look at him ever since he went down, and you keep hearing different things. But at the end of the day, I got to feel like that they feel pretty confident that he's not going to play, because you saw what we saw last night, and I don't think that there's anything that tells you that he's suddenly going to have this miraculous recovery. They need help sooner rather than later, because they got to get a guy that's got to learn the playbook and fit into the system too.
You don't think they can get by without bringing in a receiver?
I don't.
I think they could.
For the long haul.
I mean, won two Super Bowls without one.
Yeah.
I just think that Juju Smith-Schuster, to me, yeah, he played well last night. I don't think he's going to be able to do that week in, week out.
He's better than Kadarius Toney and
sure,
all the other garbage they've won titles with.
And that just tells me that Mahomes can make, you know, he can make do with anybody that he gets on his roster. But I think that they need help this year. I think because you've lost, haven't they lost multiple guys now?
Yeah, Rice and Hollywood.
Yeah, I just feel like they need at least one guy.
I think it would make them better. I think they can get by without it, though. And I think that they would use a lot of what you mentioned. I think they would run a lot of 12 personnel. I think they would kind of reinvent who they are. I think they would go a lot of two receiver sets. Obviously, Kelce, older, but Kelce was good yesterday, and he kind of can flip the switch. And I don't dislike Gray. I think Gray can play a little bit too.
They're playing four tight ends at certain parts of the game, running out there in trips formation with three, four tight ends. It was pretty crazy.
Do you all think that play, the lateral play? Reed.
He can make anything work.
They had one receiver with over 50 catches last year, Rashee Rice. Obviously, Kelce was above 52. After that, Kadarius Toney was there. Kadarius Toney and Justin Watson tied for their second most receptions last year. They won a Super Bowl with that.
Yeah, and then throw it also, who else was on that team? What, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, yep. I think, was also on that team last year.
He was. Sky Moore, who's still around, actually.
He's still around, but he was a bust of a second round
pick. Nicole Hardman, who they brought back.
They brought back, yeah.
Yeah, they don't need it. I mean, it's the whole reason they let Tyreek go. They don't need it.
I think
it'd make it more explosive, but they don't need it to win.
Yeah, I think it would help them, obviously.
I think it helps them, but I also think it also depends on who they play too. Yeah, they could win without them. But I think they could really use, because they lost two guys, they could use at least one guy that they could that I think you can go and find on the market that's probably better than Toney, better than Mecole Hardman, that, you know, you have an extra guy that Mahomes can trust to go to. Like, I think Rice was that guy. He was really building that with Mahomes, and I think that hurts him more than Hollywood Brown, who he never saw in a game.
I think Rice is really good.
He is good.
I think he's really good. That's a big loss. There's a
It is, but Kelce kind of does the same role. Like, you notice before Rice gets hurt, Kelce wasn't doing anything. And the second that Rice gets hurt, Kelsey's put back into the offense, because they're both kind of running those quick slot, you know, routes where Mahomes were.
Respectfully, I think they're different roles. Respectfully.
Rice is running a lot up in the slot, same place as Kelce.
Yeah, but I mean, Kelce's a big slot that moves really slow. It's a physical receiver. They do it differently.
I'm not saying they're the same athlete, but they're
just bunching up two or three tight ends on the one side, and then Kelce's able to kind of just dip underneath or find, you know, sit down in an open area. Whereas I think Rice is dynamic because he's so quick and he can go deep on you, but he's not afraid to go across the middle. That he did so much that built up that trust real quick that Mahomes was looking for him a lot.
Did you hear the conspiracy theory on Rashee Rice and why they wanted so many second opinions? They were kind of kicking the can down the road. There's some thought that they were trying to get the suspension done this year.
Oh,
just saying that's been out there.
Huh.
That's why they maybe
didn't
that's they
say
why
that they're not
going to
do
happened.
The ruling till after the season's over from a legal perspective.
Yeah, I think at this point they're kind of done. I think that whole effort maybe at trying to get a suspension done this year. I don't think the NFL's falling for that.
No,
it wouldn't
way.
Matter anyway. You can't serve a suspension while you're hurt. So.
Well, and the NFL said they won't levy the suspension.
But that's why they didn't come out with the injury.
I see.
Because there was a sprained MCL. Okay. Oh, he's going to be healthy for the final six games of the year.
Right.
Yeah, but at
this
point,
now
that the
NFL won't levy
the
suspension until the legal decision is made, and now the legal decision has been pushed down the road till the end of the season.
Yeah, drop the appeal. Take it to court right now. He doesn't have a torn LCL. He didn't have LCL surgery today.
If you're Roger, okay, put him out there.
Suspend him for the rest of the season, Roger. Yeah. That's the theory. That's the theory that's out
did
there.
Did you guys think that lateral was a called an actual scripted play?
I do.
I did. Man, I got, again, my less thans, my friend.
My less thans.
My less thans from a football perspective, from a friend perspective.
That's what I call the Twitchers, my less thans.
They were like, there's no, and even Buck and Aikman were kind of torn on it. And Aikman, they challenged, Joe challenged Troy to ask the question in the postgame. He said, I'm not sticking around for that. I thought it was totally a scripted play because you could just see the way they kind of lined up their guys and how the running back was coming right down the sideline in that open gap. I thought that was a completely
especially given
play.
The situation. It wasn't like it was the first
they were trying
10.
To extend.
Yeah,
right.
It was like what, second and 20 down. Something at that point.
I think it's kind of trending in the NFL nowadays too. Like you
Kelsey's
see,
done it before.
You're seeing some like real hook and ladders though, like drawn up hook and ladders. Like you never saw that. You never saw that outside of trick plays late in the game or late in the half. And now you're seeing it like in the first quarter.
Yeah, it's like a staple of like a third and long situation now instead of just like a end of game, you know, last ditch effort kind of thing.
Yeah. All right. 713-780 ESPN. King of Twitch says that I hurt his feelings. It was respectful. It was respectful. My fault. All right. Cash him or trash him. What are you cashing? What are you trashing? 713-780-3776. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I'm cashing Prodon Coops. I'm cashing that you need a goal from Prodon Coops. Whether it's you that loves to play, whether it's the missus, whether it's the kids, maybe it's the mister. Whoever loves the hoops in your house, you need to give them a goal from Pro Dunk. They make the highest quality basketball goals you'll find. Basketball's around the corner. There was an exhibition basketball game yesterday. We're about to see it on our TV. Non-stop. You're going to start to get the bug, the basketball bug. Your kids are going to start to get the basketball bug. They might already. Maybe they play for the high school team, the middle school team, AAU, whatever the case. And if you care about them and they like basketball, well, you should give them a goal from ProDunk. Tempered glass backboard gives you that true, authentic feel, unlike anything you're going to find in the big box stores. Those things never last. Those things blow down in the wind, and the rim's jacked up, and the backboard's broken. Get a goal from ProDunk Hoops. A breakaway rim, stainless steel hardware. It's height adjustable, too, anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet. And with their new goal, Thor, you can raise and lower the goals with a drill. It's easy to do, it's fun to do, and it's idiot-proof for people like me. Lightning adjust feature is what they call it, and you can get it anywhere from 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. Their accessories next level. LED light kits for night play. You work, kids are in school, only time to play is at night. Get LED light kits and you can play throughout the night. Backstop nets, pull pad lettering, and lots more. And you can order all of this, including professional installation online. Don't touch a level, don't touch a ladder. Let the pros from ProDunk come out, professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You're not going to worry about a box delivered to your driveway and then you have to assemble. No, the pros are going to assemble it. The pros from ProDunk. Let them do all the work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
ESPN 97.5.
Prepare for overreaction on my mark.
It's that time of the week where overreactions are welcome.
They say Muhammad Ali was the greatest of all time, but he never fought Cassius Clay. What was he afraid of? Boom! Hot take!
It's cash 'em.
That is so good, but that's exactly right.
Or trash 'em.
This is your hot take.
Seems like an overreaction.
With a killer bees.
Give us a hot spoonful of your opinion.
What are your hot takes? What are your overreactions? What do you want to cash or trash? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Blankers, what are you cashing? What are you trashing?
I think this year's Heisman Trophy is not going to be won by a quarterback or a running back. It's going to be won by a wide receiver. And as much as Travis Hunter is the leader right now, I think that Ryan Williams is going to work his way into the conversation. Because every time I watch that guy, I'm like, this dude is unbelievable.
That would be nuts for a freshman wide receiver.
Yeah. I think he's got a future Heisman in his future, obviously. But I don't know. After the Vandy game, it's I don't know. Sorry, Jeremy. Sorry to jump you, but I'm going to trash.
Game.
I know, but
I don't think you're that sorry.
I'm going to trash it for the Vandy game. That's going to be hard for an Alabama player to win the Heisman after that Vandy game.
But that's
Travis.
Not on him.
Yeah, but he's going to get docked for not having a big game.
He did have
against Vandy. Against the Commodores.
But he
I think
a
he wins the Heisman
he
before he
game.
Leaves Alabama. I don't think it's this year.
I'm not counting Travis Hunter as a receiver, so I'm going to trash this. What? He's not.
He's trash. He's both. He's a receiver
both.
And a defensive back.
I mean, he's both.
Okay, so then he's a receiver.
He's a defensive back before he's a receiver, though. You don't think so?
Yeah, probably. I think he's both.
To Jeremy's point, his Heisman resume would be because he's doing both, not because he's a wide receiver.
Thank you, Rusty Harden, B-Mac. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm going to trash it. Yeah, I'm going to trash it.
Trash.
Mostly because I don't think Travis is just a receiver. But I think Gene T has a really good chance at Boise State. I think there's still a quarterback award. So, yeah, I'm gonna trash this one. Cash or trash? The Commanders are the best team in the NFC East.
Ooh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to cash it. I'm going to cash it because Philadelphia, I thought at the start of the year, had more talent. I didn't give the Commanders a chance to be a playoff team this year, this soon. And it wasn't just because of the fact that they had Daniels at quarterback. But right now, with the way that everybody else has looked like less than, and they look like way more than I thought, I'll cash it.
Here we go.
I'm going to trash it because the Eagles are just this week should get back A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith. I don't think it's the Cowboys, so I'm almost there with you. Certainly not the Giants. But I think the Eagles will end up winning this division still. Commanders in second. I do think they actually squeak into the playoffs as a wild card, but I'm going to go ahead and trash it.
Trash.
All right, what do you got?
I know this will never happen because they spent the
always a great way to start it.
It is, but you know, I'm just admitting up front that I'm realistic to the idea that the people involved can't make this decision because it involves benching last year's number 4 overall pick.
It does what to him?
Benching.
Oh, benching.
Benching.
Not what I heard.
Not what you heard? Okay, well, maybe it was close. But there's no way it'll happen, but if the Colts want to make the playoffs, the move they have to make is bench Anthony Richardson and start Joe Flacco.
Oh,
there's no doubt to me that, at least for this year, Anthony Richardson will not reach Joe Flacco's current level of passer. We've seen it not only in Joe Flacco's stat line, but you look at Michael Pittman, you look at Josh Downs, they're 20, 30 yards a week before when Anthony Richardson started. They can't get going. The offense is stagnant. You put in Joe Flacco, those guys are exploding. They're moving the ball down the field. Obviously, they did lose against Jacksonville, but by 3. I mean, that game was up and down. I don't think the Colts have a prayer to make the playoffs with Anthony Richardson. I think they can with Joe Flacco.
I cash this all day long. I've never believed in Anthony Richardson's ability to throw the football. He can't stay healthy either. But when Joe Flacco comes in, aside from his stint with the Jets, where he's been, he gets results. He can play. And what he's been able to do the last 2 weeks at his age and still get points on the board and win games for his football team, I'm totally cashing this.
You look amused.
Yeah, what's the
look you look amused.
Not that it was the offense's problem. Joe Flacco and the Colts lost to 0-4 Jacksonville. They lost to 0-4 Jacksonville. So Flacco, who lost to Jacksonville, yes, not the offense's problem, but it shows you the fundamental flaw with the Colts. It's probably more on the defensive side than anything else. I don't think a Joe Flacco Indianapolis team who loses to 0-4 Jacksonville is better off or is going to make this playoff run.
Well, I said it gives them a better chance to make the playoffs.
No, I trash it. I trash it.
Trash.
So right now you think Anthony Richardson's a better quarterback than Joe Flacco right now?
I think he's more of an offensive weapon, yeah. Yeah. Now, I think that they need to rethink on how they're using him. Like I think they're throwing the ball too much with Anthony Richardson. I think they need to be a little bit more like Baltimore's offense.
Well, they only threw, what, 19?
They currently look.
I think it was 19 times
too many.
The Texans.
That's 10 times too many. It really is.
Okay.
They need to pass the ball no more than 10 times a game. They need to try to lead the NFL in rushing.
With Richardson.
And
a healthy, as long
as the problem is Richardson, I don't think Richardson can get through that type of game.
Probably not. But their best chance to be their best offense is when Anthony Richardson's throwing it 10 times a game and they're running right down people's throats. Like Baltimore. They should replicate what Baltimore does offensively. That's their best chance to win. That's their best chance to have an offense that positions you for winning. Flacco, he'll put up some numbers. He's going to gunsling it all around. He's also going to give you away a couple of games. He's going to throw some picks. Last year, he threw an interception in every single game that he played.
This year, we lost that in the shuffle.
We lost that in the shuffle because,
he's worth running into his repertoire now. Now he's a scrambling quarterback that can get you yards with his legs.
No picks against Jacksonville.
Five TDs, no picks.
Jacksonville. Cash or trash, 713-780-3776. Text or Bo, Dana Brown will shop around Framber Valdez to possibly trade him during the winter meetings.
Oh, cash that. I think whether he's shopping or he's taking calls, I think he absolutely should. Because if there's no intentions on signing him long term and he's going into the last year of his deal, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you try and get what Dana Brown really likes, and that is the ability to get some picks and some prospects that probably he knows some things about to rebuild the farm system, because he knows that he's got some pretty good young pitchers that he can still put at the top of his rotation.
Not to nitpick here.
Respectfully,
okay. And then to nitpick. It said Dana Brown will do this, because I do think he should. I think he should be trading Framber Valdez for the best package he could get in return. You can't trade for picks unless they're compensation picks. Now, I don't think that Dana Brown's going to.
You don't?
I think that they're going to run it back one more year with what they have, try to sign Bregman, probably not get it done. I don't think that the Astros have the forethought and the bravado and the courage to make these type of moves.
So you're saying Tucker did the same thing with Tucker?
Yeah. I want them to do that. Uh-huh. I don't think Dana Brown and the Astros will.
And then you're basically just saying, instead of getting any kind of package of prospects and players for each guy,
they're going to ride it out, let them walk like they did. They've done
what
you did
with everybody else.
That would be
a travesty in a lot of ways. If you know you're not going to sign one or both,
they've done it every time though.
I know it's sad if they do it with the last two guys that you probably right now are going to be able to get like a good package of players for.
The saving grace is that maybe Dana Brown's the saving grace, and he'll talk Jim Crane into that. But I don't know if Jim Crane's the kind of guy that gets talked into that sort of thing. And Dana Brown's had the opportunity with one player. He had a chance to do it with Bregman, didn't do it. So Crane has shown us time and time again he's not the owner that's going to trade a player in the final year of their deal. And Dana Brown showed us with one player that he's not going to do that.
Yeah.
So I don't believe that it will happen. I absolutely think it should, but no, I'm trashing it. I don't think Dana Brown's going to shop Framber or Kyle Tucker.
Right.
I'm going to trash for a slightly different nitpick reason, because I don't think Dana Brown would attack it from let's broadcast to the world that we're trying to use Framber, but wait for the call, the inevitable call, to then try to pick up his market. Because I kind of compare it to fantasy football. When you put on blast for the world that someone's on the block, you kind of lower their value a little bit. I don't think he's going to tell everyone that Framber is way available. He's going to wait for the phone call and then start the conversation.
Okay. But he'll have it.
Hope so.
I hope he does. I hope he has it.
8632, Alex Bregman will have better career numbers than Lance Berkman. That's Keith. Cash or trash?
I'm going to trash that.
Trash.
I think this is an easy trash. I don't think that Bregman's offensive numbers are going to get better. I think they're going to decline because he's in his 30s now. So I think he's going to go backwards based on like his slash stats. 272 average. Berkman was at 293. Bregman's not going to improve his batting average 19 points. If you want to go OPS, Bregman 848, Lance Berkman 943. I would lay down a wager that Lance Berkman's going to be 100 points better than whenever Alex Bregman's all said and done. You want to go career home runs, Berkman 366, Bregman 191.
Oh, wow.
He's going to catch Berkman?
No way.
Now, Bregman's going to have the defense. He's going to have the war, so it's going to be a little bit closer when you look at it from like a war perspective. But no, Alex Bregman will not have the career numbers of Lance Berkman.
Lance Berkman should probably get more love than he's gotten in terms of the Hall of Fame.
Lance Berkman's the second best switch hitter of our generation. He got left off on the first ballot. He did. Absolutely got hosed. He got done wrong. 4965, cash or trash. The Browns, this is Josh from Seabrook. The Browns are going to keep Deshaun in as the starter because of the contract and intentionally tank for a top five quarterback.
Well, the second half of that's going to be the interesting part. Would they be ballsy enough to take a quarterback with the pick that they get? But I don't think that Jimmy Haslam's going to let anybody bench Deshaun Watson as much as he thoroughly deserves it, because of the fact that everybody knows that this was his move, what they gave up, what they paid him, that it already should have been done and it won't be done. The only thing I would question is if they use the pick on a quarterback.
There's reports that the Haslams are making them play Deshaun Watson.
I believe that.
I do, too. I think that Jameis Winston gives them a better chance to win football games. I don't know if the contract situation is going to be... Like, it doesn't get better. It doesn't get better. So, like, taking a quarterback whenever you still have the quarterback on the books that's playing poor, I don't think they're going to tank for a quarterback. So I'd trash it on that front.
Yeah, I think that's the only hang-up. I think that they definitely should bench him. I think that they will end up with a high pick. I just don't think they'll use it on a quarterback.
Brian?
I was screening a phone call.
All right, then we won't talk to you. 4133, Cash or Trash, Aaron Judge lacks the clutch gene. He spelled it G-E-A-N, by the way. Just wanted to point that out.
So that wasn't voice texting.
It might have been.
Not when you spell it like that, because they would use a word.
No, that is a word. I wear jeans.
Oh, you said G-E-A-N.
I think I said J.
I heard G also.
My bad. J-E-A-N. Oh, My bad. I'll own it. I'll eat the L. Like Jameis Winston with W's. Cash or trash, Aaron Judge lacks the clutch gene. J-E-A-N.
In the playoffs? I'll cash it. His numbers are horrible, and it's not just for 1 or 2 years. He's 11 for his last 77. Ever since he's been in the playoffs, he's been a less than. He should be a killer B.
Except the B part.
Well, we'll call him Bud.
I'll cash it, too. I think that there's also the fact that I think that during the regular season, he terrorizes mediocre to bad pitching. And I think once he faces the upper echelon of pitchers, he's got swing and miss in his game. And the upper echelon pitchers can get him out. You can get Aaron Judge out if you're good.
And you can get him out with a fastball, which you're not supposed to do for a guy that hits bombs like tanks like that.
Yep. Well, when a guy is 6'8", like as you guys are kind of talking about, he's going to have spots in his swing and spots, you know, in his strike zone that he can't get to. And the greater pitchers take advantage of it. So I'll catch him as well.
I'm not going to read that joke, but it made me laugh. Cash or trash, New England's going to ruin Drake May by starting him already.
I don't think that they're going to ruin him, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I'm going to trash that. I don't think they're going to ruin him. He might be ruined because he's not very good. I don't think the Patriots are going to ruin him because they're playing him against the Texans.
I think there's very few times where guys are actually ruined because they're played too early. Like, David Carr is the classic example, but I think for the most part, if you have it, then you'll find a way to figure it out, and the talent eventually comes through, so I'll trash it.
8576, cash or trash, hot salsa is better than room temp salsa.
Trash that.
Trash.
Oh, cash. And I would know this because...
Yeah, of course, your percentage.
And I'm Mexican.
You're only supposed to have salsa at hot or cold. You're not supposed to have it at room temperature. It should either be hot or it should be chilled. It should never be
chilled,
room temperature.
But definitely not room temperature.
Never should be room temperature.
Yeah.
You either serve it cold. Hot, warm, or you serve it chilled.
I don't mind at room temperature, but I prefer it chilled.
You're going to get sick.
All right.
You can get salmonella or whatever it's called. Brandon T., cash or trash, the Rockets make the playoffs or play-in this year.
Play-in, yes. Playoffs.
I'm going to cash this. I think they're a playoff team. I think they get in.
Yeah, I think they could get into a play-in. I mean, they would have in most years last season. So
9-2, Tyler and Conroe, cash or trash. Tank's sophomore year will continue to be a disappointment.
Trash.
Trash.
Just like we talked about a few weeks ago, I thought Schultz was going to start having his moments. I think even more so, Tank's going to be a bigger part of this offense. I don't believe that that's going to last all season long.
Yeah, I'm going to trash this as well.
Trash.
Go Cougs. Tank Dell, really good at separating, still very good at separating. Now that you have Nico hurt for a period of time, whatever the period of time is, I think Bobby Slowick's going to game plan him more, and I think he's going to scheme him more. And if you go look at the production that Tank Dell had against Buffalo, wide open, like a little drag route, beats his guy one-on-one. Out route, beats his guy one-on-one. What is he doing? He's separating. Tank Dell's going to be just fine. All right, let's finish it up with Philip. Philip, from the Woodlands, what is your cash and trash? Cash or trash it?
Astros acquire a young catcher in the offseason to make Yiner the primary first baseman and third-string catcher.
I will trash it simply because of the fact that they don't have to acquire anybody.
Trash.
They have Caratini for another year. He could be the catcher. Yiner could be the first baseman, and your problem is solved.
Yeah, I'm going to trash it, too. Like, I'm with you.
Trash.
I think if I'm running the Astros, Victor Caratini's my starting catcher next year. Yiner's my first baseman. I'm not sold that the Astros are going to do it. I think they should, not sold that they will. Also, how difficult would it be to acquire a young catcher that is worth anything?
Worth starting?
Like, no one's going to trade a young catcher that's good. So, no, and especially that's as good as Caratini. So, I'll trash that. Now, I do hope that Yiner Diaz is the first baseman next year. I don't know if the Astros will do it. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Willibits coming up next. You never know what you're going to get. You just know it's going to be gold, Jerry. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
It's the Killer Bees, and I honestly have no idea what's happening next. Could it be the next great big food debate? The biggest Joel rant of all time? Jeremy trolling someone to the point of crying? Or just some actual bees making some honey? Well, let's find out. It's time for the Wheel of Bits.
Oh my goodness, would you look at this? What an enormous spin.
It's time for Buzzkill Brannon.
What? I'm not prepared for this. I'll go off the dome. We've been getting a lot of this Jose Altuve standing on the table, beating the drum for Alex Bregman. He's going to talk to ownership. Everybody and their mother is writing a story about how Jose Altuve's fighting for the right to Alex Bregman to allow him to party with the Astros going forward. I hate to do this, but it's going to do nothing. It's going to do absolutely nothing. If Jose Altuve knocks on Jim Crane's door in his very nice office and he says, okay, you need to re-sign Alex Bregman. And Jim Crane's like, eh, we don't have the finances to do it. What happens? What's Jose Altuve going to do? Demand a trade? No. He has signed two team-friendly contracts with you. He's very happy in Houston. Everybody's making way too big of a deal of Jose Altuve banging the drum for Alex Bregman. Jose Altuve vouching for him publicly to the media means absolutely nothing.
No, I would agree with you. I think that, you know, this goes back from a Houston perspective to when the Texans were looking for coaches and general managers, and Deshaun was still in good standing enough that he felt like he should have been more involved in the decision. I mean, or the fact that we started the show with the Aaron Rodgers drama. I mean, a lot of players feel like they should be involved in every decision or key decisions. The biggest thing is it's not their money. It's the owner's money. It's the franchise's money. And the franchise is going to do what they choose to do. And in a lot of cases, because you're not even talking about prime Altuve at this point, but it takes a very, very rare situation where the owner's actually going to incorporate what the player's feelings are and what they want in a decision of that magnitude for that amount of money.
Real quick, what did you say about Altuve?
It's not his prime anymore.
Okay, I just wanted that on the record again real quick. I don't disagree with that.
I mostly agree with Joel's point, but you brought up Aaron Rodgers in the conversation of players not getting their way, and he
It takes a very special type of player and an owner that would actually consider and involve a player in any kind of decisions. It's one thing to fire a coach. It's another thing entirely to spend that amount of money on a player.
The Astros,
I don't think Altuve could talk, you know, Jim Crane from a 3-year contract to a 6-year contract.
No.
But I will say, if it's the difference of, hey, he's going to walk unless you chip in an extra $2 or $3 million over the course of a 3-4 year deal, I do think Altuve could get him there. But it's a very limited window where the influence that Altuve has, and we could obviously debate how much he actually has, but there's a very, I think, small window where he would actually be able to move the needle a little bit.
If the Astros balk at the $2 to $3 million difference, but Altuve is the swinging measure there, the Astros have a problem.
Yeah.
Because if they're losing out on Alex Bregman for $2 to $3 million, but it's going to take Jose Altuve to speak up for them to spend the $2 to $3 million, well, the Astros are in worse shape than I thought, quite frankly, because that's kind of ridiculous. It's kind of silly. I think that the Astros have their number. The Astros have their number. They know Bregman's importance. I genuinely believe Dana Brown, which was dangerous of me, because we do know that he likes to talk a lot, or at least is very loose-lipped. I do believe that the Astros would like to have Alex Bregman back. There's not really anybody in the system that's like a guarantee to take over, although there really wasn't when Correa left either. Jeremy Pena was somebody who'd never played in the bigs. I think they called him up straight from Double-A. Like, he wasn't a guarantee to be a big league regular at shortstop. But the Astros don't have that guy at third base in the system that's ready to take over, no doubt about it, next year. DeZinzo's probably the closest, but he has some serious questions if he can be a good enough defender to play third base every day. Bryce Matthews might be in that conversation. He's still pretty dang raw. Hasn't played a ton of third base in his career. I think it's under like 25, 30 games that he's played at third base. Shea Whitcomb's not a third baseman. We saw him commit 18 errors in one game. Might have been hungover, but he committed 18 errors in one game. He's not the answer at third base, and they think higher of DeZinzo than Shea Whitcomb. The free agents, we'll see what happens with Suarez because he has a club option. Suarez is the only decent free agent third baseman. So I do genuinely believe that the Astros would like to have Bregman back because the other options are not great. But the Astros have a price, and Jose Altuve being a voice of reason for Alex Bregman is not going to change the number.
No, and the biggest thing is going to be they have a price, and so does Bregman. They also have a threshold of how many years, and so does Bregman. And Bregman's going to be hunting 6 when the Astros are probably going to be giving you no more than 4 and would like to keep it at 3 if they could. So, yeah, the price might be something that they could actually agree on for the AAV, but they're going to have a big struggle on their hands in terms of trying to get that done for the amount of years that Bregman wants versus what the team's willing to give.
Yeah, I think that Bregman's overshooting his value, by the way. I don't think that Bregman's going to get what Alex Bregman – if you gave Alex Bregman a sheet of paper today and you're like, hey, write down what you're worth, what you're going to get in free agency, I don't think Bregman's going to get that. I don't think Bregman's going to get what he thinks he is worth. I think it's going to be somewhere between the Astros offer and where Bregman hopes to get, but I still think it's going to be greater. See, the years are what's in play
there.
I absolutely think he'll get Chapman AAV. Uh-huh. Does Bregman get a 6-year contract in the open market? That's going to be tough.
He's
30.
I think he can get more money per year than Chapman got. I don't think he's going to sniff the 6 that Chapman got.
I think that Bregman's a slightly better player than Chapman, and they are very similar age. So you would think that he would. But the Giants had Chapman all year long. They like Chapman. Chapman gave him a little bit of a discount on AAV for the luxury of having a longer-term deal. In free agency, Bregman's going to have a qualifying offer, too. Chapman didn't have a qualifying offer whenever he re-signed with San Francisco. And Major League Baseball GMs have wisened up where they're not going to give these huge contracts whenever you also lose a draft pick compensation. So that's going to hurt Bregman's value a little bit, too. Like, yeah, I think Bregman's better than Chapman, but Chapman was re-signed by the Giants without them losing a compensation pick, whereas Bregman will force a team to lose a draft pick.
Yeah, I think that's going to be really interesting because I think that Bregman and Boris have the expectation that they're going to be able to get what they're looking for from at least one team, if not two teams, getting into a bidding war to get them where they want them to go. And I just have a hard time believing, no matter what people saw at the end of the year, we know what we saw at the start of the year. And I just believe that he's not going to age well either. I think that those years are going to be the huge stumbling block.
I'm worried about the aging with Bregman, too. I would like to have Bregman back, but my best in finals, 120 for four. That's the best that I'm doing for Bregman. I'm not doing a dollar more, maybe a dollar or two. 1930, I hear you, but stand up for your boy. Okay, that's fine. 7404, I know for a fact Crane will listen to Altuve. He told me firsthand he would do anything for him, but obviously not a silly, stupid number, but it holds more weight than you would think. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see how much weight Altuve really does hold.
Crane's
neighbor? Yeah, I know. Maybe he is. We'll write down the number, though. Maybe we have our inside source.
Yeah, there you go.
Justin on Twitter. The Astros balked at a couple $100,000 with Correa. That's not true. It's been reported that the best offer the Astros gave Correa was $160 million. Correa got a $385 million contract with Minnesota. That's far greater than a couple $100,000 for what was reported. Maybe you know something behind the scenes that I'm not familiar with.
And he also had the monster offer from the Giants until he failed the physical. So he had multiple teams giving him way more than what the Astros were trying to give.
That was the following free agency after he opted out.
Oh, he did
out
the one year. And he did
yeah, he signed with Minnesota. Nothing went wrong there. Then he opted out, entered free agency again, failed the physical with the Giants, failed the physical with the Mets, and then returned to Minnesota. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HR&P listener line. What the Texans offense and the Astros offense have in common. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, let me take a moment for my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure, also PRP treatments. He does a lot of things really, really well. He does spa treatments. He does Botox. He does plastic surgery. But the one that I have personal experience with is I had PRP treatments after I had the NeoGraft procedure. I've had them both. They both get you results. They get your hair back, and that is a game changer for most guys right now. I want to tell you about it because as you listen to us, if you're interested in anything that he does and he has to offer, but in particular the NeoGraft and PRP treatments, you can get a free consultation with Doc and his staff that normally costs $150 just by going to 975hair.com. People off the street going to don't go to 975hair.com and try to get that consultation. It's $150. You get it for free. All you got to do is use our app, 975hair.com. Sign up for the appointment. Go in with an open mind. Ask questions. Get answers. Let them explain everything to you. You find out that much like in lawn talk circles, you'll realize that the PRP treatments are like fertilizing your lawn. There's hair there. It's not as thick and as strong as it used to be. The PRP treatments actually strengthen the hair, get it to be a lot thicker and a lot better of quality. And the fact is, you get better results. From the same standpoint, the NeoGraft procedure. You're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go in other areas. So Doc takes some of that, like resodding your lawn, puts it where you have bald spots. Before you know it, you've got hair growing again. The hair is thick and it's lush, and you're going to see results that you love in about 6 to 9 months. Phenomenal, but you don't have to take a single dollar out of your wallet, sign on the dotted line, or make any commitments. Just get the information. What do you have to lose? Check it out and see if you might be interested in trying to go and get the procedure or at least the PRP treatments. And Doc will be honest with you and tell you what you need. But all start the process today. All it takes is simply going online, going to 975hair.com and getting all the information. Tell them I sent you by.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Keeping your IT team sharp isn't optional. It's essential. CBT Nuggets delivers high-quality IT training led by real-world experts who know what teams actually need on systems teams will actually use. Whether it's staying current on cloud, networking, or security, CBT Nuggets makes training simple, effective, and scalable. No fluff, no wasted time, just smarter, faster IT teams. Thousands of companies trust CBT Nuggets, and yours can too. Go to cbtnuggets.com/solutions and start training today.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.